Hello, my name is Marie Bilodeau, and you are listening to On the Edge. Broadcasting from World Fantasy Con in Calgary, I'm pleased to welcome author Rebecca Rowe of Forbidden Cargo. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So how are you enjoying the convention?
Well, I just got here, it's my first time in Calgary, but I'm originally from Colorado, and Denver is very close to Calgary and how it looks.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so as I was landing, and everybody who had never been here before was, oh, that looks just like Denver.
That's funny, I never realized.
Yeah, because we have the Rockies in the west, so that kind of frames the city, and then the city even itself, the central part.
Kind of the same grid system going on?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, wonderful, yeah. Wonderful. So tell us a little bit about Forbidden Cargo.
Okay. Forbidden Cargo is about what happens when we take human evolution into our own hands. 100 years from now, there's a research facility on Mars where the firstborn daughters of nanogenetics have been developed. And it's an illegal kind of secret facility that the Order has developed. And the interplanetary government back on Earth finds out about it. And they're really upset because they don't want the human genome to be altered. So they basically have a team go out to Mars, capture Sashimu and Thesni, who are two of the ones who've been developed, bring them back to Earth to stand trial as evidence against their creators. And then the whole story goes from there. So that's where it starts. And then the whole story is about Sashimu and Thesni and what they go through trying, all they're trying to do is get home. But everybody thinks they're these terrible aberrations. And then, so it's who helps them and who doesn't and who wants to use them in different ways and so forth. So that's the story.
Wonderful. Would you say it's like, I mean, it's obviously sci-fi, but is it like more of an action-packed sci-fi or more of a...
Yeah, I think it's it would be considered an action, even it has some mystery to it, so yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So what was the inspiration for it?
That's hard.
So
I guess
things.
It definitely has a kind of a post-cyberpunk, not in terms of style, stylistically, but just in terms of subject matter, because there's also the molecular advantage machine, which allows for a much more advanced virtual, virtual world along with the real world. So, so you can go in just using in my kind of alternate career, I was also doing tech writing for MapQuest and other companies that were all, of course, all internet companies.
Neat.
And, yeah, from the early stages in 97 and so forth. So it really impacted how I thought where, you know, the virtual world is going for us, not only writing Forbidden Cargo, but what's beyond that. And so I'm very fascinated with Ray Kurzweil's Singularity, which is nonfiction, but and William Gibson's fiction. You know, I'm very influenced by the SF authors of Canada. So that's kind of what headed me in that direction, is my own experience working in the internet, and kind of thinking of where that might go.
Wonderful. Did you obviously you have a type of expertise in internet, but did you do any further research to see some of your concepts? Like even just the bioengineering of the human and the cybernetic? Did you do any further research on that?
Sure. I did some research into genetics and genetic modifications and so forth, you know, and I mean, it's so controversial even, you know, today. So you can imagine if we were actually trying to alter the human genome, what that's going to be. And what fascinates me is actually that initially it'll be very easy for us to do it, in the sense that if we're changing ourselves just so that we don't inherit terrible diseases, you know, things like Alzheimer's and other things that are really destroy our kind of way of life, our lives, if we get them. There's things that are clearly genetically passed on that don't need to be. You know, if we could change that, there's probably very few people would say, oh no, I'm okay to get a Huntington's disease or whatever, it's a horrible thing, right?
Yeah.
We'd all say, okay, yeah, that's I can be changed. You can alter the embryo for that. But other things become much more problematic. And who decides? Do parents decide? Because, I mean, do we want, kids who have a specific look? Is that what we're going to come down to? Or, I mean, you can imagine that people have different ideas about what would be important.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And so some things are very obvious and other things are very disturbing because we don't want to end up with kind of what we've seen in our past history in terms of World War II and Hitler and so forth. You can easily go into a direction that's terrifying, and
that's true, and
you don't want the government to control it. Do you want individual parents to control it, or just regulatory systems? And so all of that's fascinating to me. So
that's wonderful. It's wonderful too that you're really taking into consideration that at some point it will be controlled, like it will definitely become an option at some point, like the way you're speaking right now to you, it will become an option at some point, and it's just a matter of who gets what say in it. That's going to be the problem, whether eventually it comes back to not at all having those sanctions, not at all being able to control the genetics. But I'm kind of getting the feeling from you that you really do believe at some point we will have the option, states individually sanctioned, to do those genetic modifications.
Well, I guess what I would say is that anytime we're able to, anytime we have technologies available to us, once we have them, it's very, very tempting to use them. And I think it's human explore. So even if in the United States we're very, or in Canada, or in some other places, we're very careful about what we adopt in terms of, you know, experimentation, there'll always be a place or maybe something, you know, clandestine that goes a little bit further and experiments and so forth. So
it's like kids in a cookie jar, right?
Yeah, I think so. So I think that certain that of any future, because we're doing all kinds of things that are destroying even our environment, you know. But
yeah.
But I mean,
true.
Say we make it through some of these scarier things that we're doing right now, I think we're gonna have to grapple with some really. It'll be exciting, but we'll also have to grapple with some very difficult questions about what we do and don't do to ourselves and to other things. I mean, right now we have modified food, right? I mean, genetically modified soybeans. I mean, it goes on and on. So, and we've already seen problems from that. We've had the issue with the wild bees, and nobody knows if, you know, some of that might have been a result of they say it's an autoimmune disease that the wild bees are dying of, but we rely in our agriculture still on wild bees to pollinate vast areas of our agriculture. So to have those wild bees start to disappear is really, really scary. So and they say that there's potential. This is all, you know, theoretical, but that some things that have been genetically modified in terms of, you know, crops and so forth could also, but
how one thing trickles into another. That
exactly.
We're all linked together
yes,
here.
Yes. Yeah.
So, do you see Forbidden Cargo as a type of cautionary tale, or as just an exploration of possibilities?
I think it's more of an exploration of possibilities. I didn't want it to be. There are a lot of cautionary tales out there, and it's easy to kind of go into a dystopia. But for me, what I wanted to do was to explore the idea that once you have been modified, and say it's illegal, what are you going to do with those people? Are you just going to get rid of them? I mean, you can't really, you know. I mean, they're human at some level, right? So, so I think that to me, that I wanted to show both the social concern at a larger level, but then, you know, two kind of very innocent beings that are just, they come into this world and they have certain modifications and they don't really have much of a choice. You know,
so you're kind of keeping in mind the human aspect as opposed to just the scientific aspect.
Yeah. So I guess I would say I was just exploring, like many people have explored, but exploring what it means to be human.
That's wonderful. Wonderful. So why did you decide to become a writer? Was there...
I think I've always liked writing, yeah.
Just kind of trickled into a novel eventually, and...
Yeah, I heard somebody say they wrote since they were, basically they were writing on their mother's womb or something. No, I'm not like that. but I mean, my mom used to drive her crazy because I'd wrote poetry on anything. See, I had this idea that you shouldn't write on any, it shouldn't have to be fancy paper or a journal or on the computer or something. You should be able to write anywhere at any time. You know, I had this idea. And so I would write on all kinds of stuff, and it would drive her crazy because she'd find these things. And she's like, what am I supposed to, I just want to throw all this stuff away. You know what I'm saying? Because I wasn't very neat either about, like, because I had this idea, and then I had all these things everywhere. So.
Creative expression.
Yeah, it's wonderful. She wasn't so...
She wasn't so convinced.
No,
eh?
Not at all.
I can understand that.
Yeah. Yeah, today I think I would be like, let's just keep that theory right here in the head.
Just keep it in the head for now.
Yeah.
So are you working on anything else right now? Or?
I am. I have another book I'm submitting to Edge. That should be out if, you know, as long as everything goes well, should be out for Worldcon next year for Montreal, which would be really fun.
Oh, wonderful. Can you tell us a little bit about it? Just without revealing anything big or anything you think might be removed. Or...
Oh, okay. Well, right now it's called, the working title is Spider and Crow Wings Through Webs. Mm. And it's about, it takes place in 2140, and it's about a girl named Cypress, a young woman, she's 22, and a man named Noah. And she's basically had enhancements, mental enhancements, because she lives in a world where everybody, now this is kind of the mirror of the other book I wrote, here now we've taken genetics to its logical end, and they've made some changes to make sure that, you know, our brains are just a little bit bigger and, you know, so we think a little faster and so forth. But there's a lost generation that haven't received any enhancements. And she's trying to get a job. She can't get a job. She's in terrible debt. So there's an institute that offers some mind enhancements. And it's experimental. And so she does it. And she, in quick time, she becomes kind of a superstar for this institute because she's able to analyze things in a certain way. And at any rate, simultaneously, there's an eco-disaster, and which a fringe group is accused of, which Noah is part of, and her institute is assigned to try to figure out what this fringe group is all about and what this eco-disaster is and how to stop it, basically, because it keeps spreading. And so she and Noah become friends, and meantime, her mind enhancements are going awry, and she's having hallucinations, and he's accused of being an eco-terrorist. So the two of them are kind of like, they're in this terrible situation, and it's all about them.
Oh, wonderful. Sounds like a action fact. It certainly sounds like you're not pulling your punches in this story at all, Wonderful. I look forward to reading it.
Oh, I'd love you to.
So hopefully we'll see it at the next Worldcon in Montreal.
Yeah, that should be wonderful.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Yeah, great. Good for you. So what are you looking forward to next in World Fantasy Con, like this year? What you doing with the rest of the day?
Oh, yeah. Well, tonight there's parties. I've got a few parties. Are you going to go?
Of course you go.
And then there's a... one of my favorite things is actually to see authors read. I love to see them, especially after I've read their works, you know. So Linda Williams is going to read, and there's going to be other people reading, Robert Sawyer and so forth, and I want to see them reading because I love their interpretation. Sometimes their voice comes through in a way I don't expect, and I always enjoy that.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's really great. Well, thanks a lot. I hope you enjoy the rest of the con.
Thank you.
And I'm really looking forward to your next book. We'll chat again when that one's
when that
out.
Comes out. Okay.
Oh, yeah. We'll do another one.
Let's hope it all goes well.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Thanks for the interview.
Thanks for being here.